Thank you. We will now be conducting a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star two if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. Once again, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad if you'd like to ask a question.
Okay, so
we have a question from Diane Loden from Montreal, Quebec. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Diane. How are you?
I'm fine. I actually waited for about 5 seconds. I thought, I don't want to be first in the queue, but there you go. I'm first in. So I was just going to respond to your last comment about asking people what their top two problems were.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we instituted in our clinic a number of years ago was a pre-clinic questionnaire.
Nice.
And I think I learned this actually from my colleagues from across Canada. A number of clinics had done this. And I think clinics have handled it in different ways. Some clinics have actually mailed it out to patients ahead of time and had them mail it back, which I think resulted in a pretty low return rate. But what we have our patients do is just to sit in the waiting room and complete this preclinic questionnaire. And the first question is, what are your top three concerns at this visit?
Right.
And then followed by some sort of some symptom issues, kind of a list of symptoms, and, you know, I have, you know, mild, moderate, or severe, and I would like to talk about this particular symptom, and then kind of some impact on quality of life kinds of questions. So, you know, given that I have these things, what's the impact on my leisure, my socialization, my sexuality, my, you know, ability to manage things at home? So it's just a way of kind of getting a snapshot before the person even comes in. They've been waiting perhaps for some time. I think you've done very well with your 15-minute waiting time as a maximum because I'm not sure all clinics can necessarily meet that. But it gives people a chance to kind of collect their thoughts, think about things a little bit, and also to kind of reflect, do I need any medication renewals at this visit rather than calling later on? So it's just one thing that we found has been very helpful to kind of get a sense of what is the patient really most concerned about at this visit, and are there things that maybe they're reluctant to talk about? You know, such one time a patient actually wrote down that she was quite depressed on this preclinic questionnaire, and then when I was kind of exploring this with her, she said she had never revealed that to anybody, and she felt she'd been depressed for about 20 years. So
it
kind of gave her permission
to
talk about something because we had written it down as one of the possible issues that MS patients might be faced with. So
that's a great idea, Diane. Is that something that you could share?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if we can put something like that on. I mean, I would like it personally. We do have a questionnaire that we use. It's for some reason, it's not consistently given to everybody. I'm not quite sure what that issue is.
We have the same problem, too, and it's like, what is the problem? There's the paper and the clipboard, you know? But I think sometimes depending on our staffing and our clerical staff,
sometimes
it doesn't happen, and yet it seems like a fairly straightforward thing. But
Because they have their time management issues, right?
Most of the time it works quite well.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think it helps people get their thoughts organized. You know, I think... I mean, I've done this. I can remember, you know, here I am, a nurse practitioner, and I take my kids to the pediatrician's office, and I'd ask questions and get answers, and I'd get out to the car, and I'd think, oh, my God, you're an idiot. You didn't ask XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I wasn't organized enough, right? And I think that it really, what you're saying really helps people gather their thoughts, and it can really help with them making an effective visit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can share that would be fabulous, and I think maybe others could benefit. They may already use something like that, but may get some tips from yours. I liked the approach with the quality of life issues and the impact on daily life. I think that's great. Thank you.
That's a great point, Diane. Thank you so much for
sharing.
Posting
that on our web.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shall we move on to the next question?
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. We have a question from Carol Saunders from Oceanside, California. Please go ahead with your question.
Kathy, Your suggestions are absolutely wonderful. I've made a list of them and hope to incorporate them in my life. However, one thing that you didn't talk about is, what do you do when you work with a doctor, particularly, or several doctors, who are not on time themselves and expect you to be there when after hours if they're waiting? I mean, how do you handle that?
Yeah, no, that's tough. I mean, I spent time in that role. And, you know, not that you could handle it, and I certainly couldn't handle it in the clinic, but, you know, these were conversations that we actually did have outside of clinic. In fact, when I was doing that role, I had childcare issues, so it wasn't as though I had the same kind of hours in the day that they would have. And we had to come to an understanding that at a certain time, my children were going to turn into pumpkins, and I needed to leave. And it was an easy out in a way, because they really couldn't argue that point, right? But without that, I see this happening to some of our nurses. And I still think it requires that conversation, although it's risky because, you know, this is also the person that writes your check or signs your check. You know, so you can't just say, hey, listen, buddy, I'm not doing this anymore. But I think it's difficult because I see this happening with one of our physicians in particular, and he runs very late. And this nurse winds up being there later for sure. I don't know if there's a good answer other than discussing it and hoping that that person can appreciate that, you know, there may be other time constraints for you individually that don't necessarily match his or hers,
you know,
for that matter.
That's true, and I feel so badly because I think nurses do feel badly. You want to spend the time with the patients, too.
Right.
Just, I mean, they've had to wait, and you don't want them not to be able to have the time with you that they feel that they need. So
it's a rough thing. It is a dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Carol. That's a great point.
You know, I've actually asked people if they're local. I mean, and again, this is not for the traveling person, but if people are local and it looks like it's just going to be disastrous, maybe there is an emergency. You know, it invariably it's Friday afternoon and it's, 2:45, and you ask that question, have you felt suicidal? And the person says, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. And, you know, that requires an immediate intervention, right? I mean, you're not just going to say, oh, they're there now. Listen, give me a call on Monday and let me know how you're feeling. So you have to intervene. So that next patient, which may be the last patient, you think, you know what, it is going to be an hour or more before I lay eyes on this person. Maybe the best thing to do at that point is to go to that person and say, look, I have an emergency, I apologize, but I don't want to make you wait an hour. If you want to wait, I'll see you, you know, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. But if you'd rather reschedule your appointment and then, you know, provide them with maybe a time outside of your normal clinic or something to accommodate them, sometimes that has worked for me. And it takes the pressure off of everybody. Right, because you're feeling like, okay, I can devote all the time that this individual needs without worrying that there's somebody else that I still need to see and also devote time to.
Great. Right. Thanks a lot, Kath.
Thanks, Carol. Can we take the next question, Joe?
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. The next question is from Lori Mayer from Austin, Texas. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy. Hi, Jen. Hey. Great talk tonight. It's made me started thinking of a lot of different things, and this is a different, little bit different topic. But for myself, so much time is spent in paperwork, and it's trying to find the time to get all the paperwork done.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that we use, you know, templates for, which I find are very helpful. I didn't know if anybody else had any ideas for organizing the paperwork that you needed to be done or particular templates that they might have, they might want to share. Anything, any suggestions?
Well, I can say, Lori, that we try and have a lot of the letters that are pretty commonplace letters, you know, standard letters that the admin has that they, you know, they just have to plug in the name. You know, the things like if you're needing disability, you need a wheelchair or walker, whatever it happens to be, just to keep it pretty standard and simple. All of us have something like that. The forms are tough. And, you know, we've gone round and round, particularly about disability forms that come in, and, you know, they're pages long, and they're asking for assessments that we don't normally make, you know, like the assessments of the push, pull, lift, stand, crawl, reach, how many pounds somebody can carry.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, sometimes it's easy, depending on someone's difficulty level. But on the other hand, sometimes I don't know the answers to that, and I don't do that kind of formal assessment. And sometimes I will use my note and put a narrative in, you know, just bypassing all that stuff. And I'll bracket it and say, this is not formally tested in this clinic. And I, you know what, and I thought the first time I did that, I thought, oh, brother, they're going to deny this poor person. This is really chancy. They did not. They accepted
they
that. They accepted it. It was fine. I sent my note. I sent a description of what I was talking about and didn't have any problems whatsoever.
Okay.
And I was obsessed with, you know, filling in every blank cause for fear that if I didn't, someone wouldn't get covered. So I almost wondered if we were open to more liability if I was making an assessment, kind of making a guess at certain things, well, that I really
right.
don't formally test. I don't do vocational assessments.
Right.
So,
and
anyway.
That's an excellent point, you know, when you think about it. And I'm sure we all get those forms like that. And I feel very frustrated when I have to spend the time in trying to pull it out. And you're right. You know,
yeah.
we don't do those type of assessments either.
Right.
So it's good to know that maybe if we just do a narrative and send in maybe some records or with it, that it wouldn't be turned
yeah.
down.
Right. You know, the other thing is that when I see somebody, I ask them, you know, are you working? Are you, it comes up often in one of us will bring up disability and have they considered it? Have they applied? And then I can make my note. You know, I mean, we've talked about
uh-huh.
it. So we've made it a level of assessment. This person cannot work because, you know, they have fatigue that increases over the course of the day. They have ambulatory difficulties, decreased stamina, cognitive dysfunction, whatever it happens to be,
uh-huh.
right? But now it's in my note. So now when I send that note, it's kind of, there it is, bam. It's timed, dated, signed that we've made this assessment. And I have found that that is also very helpful. And I try and keep my wording in my note in keeping
uh-huh.
with the disability rules,
uh-huh.
right? So if it's fatigue, I don't just say fatigue. I say fatigue that increases throughout the day with activity, right? Something like that, so that it matches what the rules say that they, you know, would qualify them for disability.
Those are great points.
So if a patient comes in and they're coming
mm-hmm.
in for a normal appointment
mm-hmm.
and then they pull out when you get in there, they don't give it to the people up front or anything, all this paperwork, they expect you to fill it out right then and there. Do
yeah,
you?
And they're dreaming. I mean, really. And I'll look at them and I say, really? Are you kidding
yeah.
me? I said, there's no way I'm doing that today. I mean, and I'll have it to you by, and then and set a realistic deadline, right?
Uh-huh.
That really is critical. You can't do it in the clinic. I mean, you have to think about that stuff. And I say, no, I will not do that today.
And one thing that might be helpful, I don't know, Kathy, what I've instituted also
mm-hmm.
in my practice is that, and I think you can do this regardless if you're a nurse practitioner,
mm-hmm.
what level you're practicing is that we've made a rule in the clinic that if you need forms completed, you actually need to make an appointment with the nurse practitioner.
Nice.
And I will actually spend a 40-minute visit with them or longer doing those assessments. And the reason we instituted that was because we were being so bombarded with forms and they were
yeah.
getting lost inevitably. So what we do is we have the patient actually bring the form in. We complete the form in front of the patient so they know exactly what is being put on the form so there's nothing to be disputed later
mm-hmm.
And so that they are in complete agreement with what we are going to be sending and we can verify that everything we're putting on the form is true
mm-hmm.
based on our assessment at that time. And then we actually fax the form from our office with the patient there who will get a copy of it. The original will go into the chart, and so they will also receive a copy of the confirmation that the fax was in fact received. So they leave the clinic with their forms completed and a copy and know that they have been already sent. So it has really seemed to streamline.
That's spectacular.
Yeah, and we are able to then be reimbursed for that time because
mm-hmm.
otherwise you find yourself at the end of the day completing these forms, you don't have the patient in front of you,
right.
If you get lost, it's a problem. And so that might be something that you may find helpful for those of you who are inundated with forms.
I think that's a great idea. And maybe if you don't have a practice that you know, have someone who can have that kind of an appointment like that. Maybe a way to get around that is to ask the patient. They can make a copy of their form by and large, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they can, I've had people write in on their phone, on their form, because it has subjective, right?
Correct.
What are your subjective issues? Write them in. You know, and I have a form, you know, a clean copy, and I can certainly word it differently. But what? How many times, this? You bring up a good point when you say you get to put on the form what they're anticipating is going to be on the form, what they're expecting. So how many times have we had to call them and say, what are we going for here?
Exactly.
You know, what is it that you're hoping to get? And, you know, if they do that ahead of time, if you can't have that appointment, maybe you can kind of do some of the same things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, great. Those are great points. Yeah. I wanted to know, are there any other questions that the audience members would like to pose to Kathy, or, in fact, comments you'd like to share for the learning needs of the entire audience?
Again, it's star one to ask a question or make a comment. The next question is from Stephanie Agrello from Austin, Texas. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy. Hi, Jen and Lori.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention one thing that we've kind of instituted with regards to the disability paperwork that's really been helpful. You know where you were talking about the push-pull, basically
yeah.
that whole functional capacity exam. We have started to utilize physical therapy for that evaluation. And so if it's a first time, you know, brand new paperwork and this is all new, I'll have them go over there and they'll actually get a complete evaluation with the physical therapist, and she'll document all of that
mm-hmm.
On the paperwork that we have. And then we have a baseline,
mm-hmm.
and it's fairly, I mean, of course, it's accurate. But now that, you know, Jen mentioned having them come in for an actual visit to complete the paperwork, I'm wondering if that might actually be better.
Yeah,
and more time, you know, less time consuming, and then just X out all of that functional capacity portion of it and put in a narrative of some sort.
Yeah.
So it's funny, Jen, we were talking about this not long ago, all of the disability paperwork, and you had mentioned to me that was something that you did, that you brought them in for that visit, and I've been thinking about that ever since. I think it would be a really good way to decrease the errors that have undoubtedly occurred.
Yeah, and also if nurses, you know, you don't have to be a nurse practitioner to do this. So nurses
mm-hmm.
can make the appointment as well, and the physician will have to sign off on the paperwork, and they may have to just do an exam to verify that what has been put on the form is accurate. But the fact is that you've still had a visit, and in those situations where either the physician can then, it can be billed under the physician, or you can just set up a policy in your office that you're going to complete forms, and it will be a dollar charge, you know, whatever you set up in your clinic. So this is something that at all levels of nursing can be conducted. So are there any other questions out there? Thank you, Stephanie, for your input.
That was excellent.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
Do we have any additional questions in queue, Joe?
Well, I have a question for you, Jen.
Oh, sure.
How do you bill that? I mean, what level are you, when you're doing those visits yourself, how are you?
I do it either a level 1, 4, or 1, 5, depending on how much time, because
uh-huh.
different forms, if it's, you know, a simple form, and I do this across the board for all forms, whether they want to get public transportation or if they're doing handicap sticker, if they're doing, you know, whatever that is, we've just instituted that if you have forms to be completed, they have to be done at the time of a visit. And so if it's disability forms, things that are going to take quite a bit of time, I may block out an hour in my schedule and then end up billing them a level 1-5.
Mm-hmm.
If it's only a shorter form, it might be a level 1-4. And if I have time, I will just do a regular routine follow-up visit,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially if they haven't been seen in 3 to 6 months. So we try to make it as accommodating for the patient, but
mm-hmm.
also at the same time making sure that we're being reimbursed for our time.
I think it's great. I thank you for that. That's a very good tip. I plan to institute starting tomorrow.
So, Again, I just wanted to pose any questions out to the audience members. If you have any comments that you would like to share with the group, that would be fantastic, about how to strategies in which you've employed for time management, either personally or professionally, or again, any clinical tips and tools that you would like to share with us.
I have a question, if anyone cares to try and tackle answering it, because universally I think that we all have, I don't know about any of you, but it's really hard for me to use the phone when I get home at night because I have been on the phone. I feel like it's glued to my ear. If I'm not in clinic, I'm on the phone. And I feel that there's an inordinate number of phone calls coming in, and I don't think I can necessarily stop the flow, but it's the same thing as being in the clinic, you know, how to manage your time on a phone call. And if someone has some good tips on that, that would be great. And maybe does anybody use email to correspond with their patients?
Yeah, so while we're waiting for an answer, I'll just tell you practically what I've done, Kathy, is now that I'm in a private practice, obviously maximizing efficiency is of paramount importance.
Mm-hmm.
So what I generally tell folks is that all refills will be completed at the time of their visit. So
mm-hmm.
in addition to their review systems and their medication reconciliation, I'll ask them which of their medications do they need refills
mm-hmm.
on, and I always write them one additional for to cover them should they have to cancel or reschedule an appointment for their typical routine appointment. So
mm-hmm.
say they're coming back in 6 months, I'll give them refills for 7.
Mm-hmm.
And generally that has cut down significantly on the number of in-between calls that are occurring.
Uh-huh.
Same with if patients are having new symptoms. If they've lasted more than 24 hours and we spend a lot of time in our clinic defining what a relapse is,
mm-hmm.
So if they're having new symptoms, we generally, I leave an hour at the end of every day. So I don't take patients, I don't take appointments from 4 to 5 because that's my urgent add-on time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if they're having new symptoms, they actually need to come in because we'll need to do a UA and make sure that there's no infection occurring. And then they then are at least seen within the same day, if not the same week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to consider.
Nice.
Also. But I know for all nurses who work in the MS clinic, we are inundated with telephone calls. And you're right, Kathy. I think it's imperative to learn how to say no or at least set some organizational boundaries.
I agree. We do a lot of educating of our clerical staff. We don't have a lot of nurses to field and triage phone calls, which would be ideal. But, you know, we don't have just excessive amount of staff, unfortunately. But on the other hand, you know, we call them medical office coordinators, will ask someone if they're having new symptoms. And honestly, they may shoot me an email or a text message that says, you know, I'm on the phone with so-and-so, she's having this and this. And I may say right there, just schedule them for an appointment, right? And
right.
Then I'm not calling them back. They're going to come in the next day or so to my urgent appointment. And I've tried to do that just to kind of, it's what I'm going to say to them anyway, right? And
right.
And this way it kind of eliminates that as a mediating step.
Yes, and certainly assessing over the phone and managing over the phone are quite challenging.
Yeah.
definitely. Joe, do we have any other questions in queue?
Once again, to ask a question or make a comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. We have a question from Lori Mayer from Austin, Texas. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy and Jen.
Mm-hmm.
Good conversation on that. Sometimes I have a hard time too. How do you departmentalize your day? How do you structure your day? I mean, you have a certain structure that you start out with. It may just, you know, all go to pieces, you
right.
know, with the unexpected, but how do you actually structure your what time you see your patients? When
right.
are there particular times that you would do your callbacks? I think it's a lot of offices, since we all are in different settings, and some have maybe better infrastructures than
mm-hmm.
others do. I would just be interested to see how you structure your day.
Yeah, thanks. So. It depends on the day, but on a heavy clinic day, which is my starting at 7:30 and going all day. So I have a tendency to get in early anyway. I have to travel from the county to the city, so I try and avoid traffic. I usually get in about an hour before clinic starts. And that way I can answer any voicemail message that have occurred overnight. And that list that I created the night before, there are some things on there that I may need to finish looking up lab results. You know, maybe I've been waiting for something to come in, that kind of thing. I don't set a lot of things because an hour is not a lot of time. So just those few things. Then in clinic, I really don't do much in terms of anything other than seeing patients. If someone doesn't show up, I tend to use that time to dictate notes. Just because, you know, that's another bane of existence is to have to dictate everything. And then I have a break between morning and afternoon clinic. I will check with my medical office coordinator to see if there's anything that's occurred in the morning, because that might be the priority. If not, then I'll, you know, do anything that I need to finish up from the morning. See patients in the afternoon, and then when I get back to the office, it's phone calls and emails. And then that's it. And I try and set time. I mean, I work in a very dangerous part of Baltimore City, so it's not an option to just think that you're going to work until 8 or 9 o'clock and stroll to your car. You can do that, but it might be the last time that you do that. So I leave early. I mean, you know, you have – and then that's a very good way to manage my time, is that you're not staying here late. You know, you're going home, and make my list for the following day.
That sounds good. I know I start I usually leave the house about 6:15 so I can get in there at 7, and I need that whole hour or hour and a half before the office really starts. I can get so much done at that time. And then I do try to get on the road at 4 for not quite the same reason, but traffic being pretty bad for me to get home. But so how many patients do you think you see on an average day?
Tomorrow I have 13 scheduled,
13.
Which is a day of
all.
That's
a pretty good load, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be less if there's a lot of new patients, because obviously they take a little bit longer, so it'll be a little bit less.
And you said you give new patients the full hour?
Yes.
Is that what you do?
Yep.
And then your follow-ups are
30
half
minutes.
Hour? 30
yep.
minutes?
Yep, 30 okay. minutes. And I can't, I mean, honestly, I see people that spend less time. I can't do it. I don't know how. It's 30 minutes is almost okay. I think 40 would probably make more sense, but you know what? I just don't have 40, so I have 30. And
how frequently do you see them? Every 3 months, or does it depend on the patient?
It depends. Yeah, it really depends on, you know, what treatment they're on, what their issues are. If there's no issues, every 6 months. If they are on some kind of a disease-modifying treatment, injectable particularly, usually for the other therapies it might be more frequent. Our infusion center is, you know, a few doors down the hall from where my exam room is. So honestly, when people come in for their infusions, whatever they happen to be, it's easy to make sure they're okay. They're right there. But it just depends. You know, it could be a month, it could be 3 months, it could be 6 months.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Lori. Are there any other questions in queue, Joe?
Yes, we have a question from Carol Saunders from Oceanside, California. Please go ahead.
This isn't really a question, but I wanted to let you know that I have put into practice some of the things that I wanted patients to put into practice when I was working with them, and that was to fill out – we had forms – to fill out before they came in. But now I'm a caregiver or a care partner, and when I take my husband to the doctor, I have a form that I fill out, and I, you know, I have all the information, all of his prescriptions and what his diagnoses are and who he sees and all that stuff, as well as where to call for prescriptions, that all the information I can, and then any questions that I have. And I type that out and hand it to the doctor. Well, I'm telling you, they love me. They love us when we come in now, because it's all there for them. And unfortunately, I don't think it's made them want to give their patients forms like that. But when they come in, I get the greatest smile.
Yeah, it really keeps it so organized, Carol. It's such a great idea. I think what, you know, Diane has her patients do in the waiting area is a fabulous idea. I've actually done some time studies of just how much time it takes to do certain things. You know, so if you have 30 minutes, start ticking off the time for each of the things that are requirements. It's not even that, you know, you feel like doing it, right? So walking them back to the exam room, I have to get a weight, vital signs, medications. And if these things haven't been done easily for someone with MS with a little mobility impairment, 15 minutes of the 30 minutes can be gone, and we've not spoken a word other than, let's go this way, you know?
Yeah. And they don't remember.
No. And, you know, it's dreadful when I don't have anything. You know, they might be new to me as a follow-up, and the previous person maybe didn't do such a great job with the medication list. So I have to say, what medications are you on? And you know it's going to start off really badly when they say, well, you know, it starts with a B. You know, it's that little yellow one with the numbers on the front. And I'm like, oh, gosh. You know, I mean, yeah. In the old days, they could describe a pill and you knew what it was. But, you know, now, of course, you can't tell anything. But anyway, you know, those things take so much time. So what you're doing, I wish everyone could do. At least part of that would be fabulous. It really would help.
Yeah, would be helpful. Thanks, Carol. We have time for one last brief question. I believe we have one last question in queue that we'd like to take before we wrap up.
We have one last question from Diane Loden from Montreal, Quebec. Please go ahead with your question.
Sorry, was that me?
Yeah.
Sorry, for some reason Joe's kind of cut out on my phone, but I'm kind of a couple of discussions back by the time I had logged in, but it was just going back to the role of our clerical staff that we've done a lot of work to we've done a lot of work to just try to get them up to speed and how to triage calls and how to deal with certain calls. And
yeah.
And we have one of those annoying number systems, you know, 123.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's helped to, because, you know, patients would call and want to direct everything to the nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have one secretary who deals with appointments and prescription renewals, another secretary who deals with forms and insurance, and another secretary who deals like and letters and that kind of thing, and then somebody else who kind of triages or at least screens, I guess, calls for clinical content and then forwards them to us. So we have a telephone system, plus we have kind of a sort of an algorithm or sort of a list of, you know, which calls to direct to who. Now, of course, the physician in our program gets very few calls, but, you know, there's some things that we set an expectation that if there's a physician calling for him specifically, him or her, that they do take that call. And so the secretaries know how to kind of reach them and how to connect with them. So I think we've done a lot of work also.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have nurse practitioners in our province as yet in the neurosciences. So, you know, we don't prescribe and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of things that the physicians do that just, you know, require them to either complete something or do a prescription and then, you know, give it to the secretary. And I think a lot of the time there was kind of a nurse as or a clinical nurse specialist as an intermediary. And over time, we've just kind of said, you know, look, there's a part that you do and there's a part that the clerical staff can do. And I find that we've really been able to kind of streamline the kinds of things that are coming to us. So the things that we do deal with are really, you know, meant for
mm-hmm.
nursing and CNSs in particular. So
yeah.
I was just, yeah, kind of thinking
yeah.
about some of the work that you guys have done as well. And you know, that certainly helped us with this huge volume, huge activity clinical
mm-hmm.
center.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea. In fact, it's interesting that you mentioned that system for your clerical staff in one having this responsibility, one having the other. We're absolutely... Our immunology group is actually instituting that very system May 1st,
okay.
so that we have a group of medical office coordinators that have previously
right.
each been assigned to a particular provider.
Mm-hmm.
And now, rather than doing that, because they were doing everything for that person, now it will be work delineation, just as you've described. Someone will do prior authorizations, which I don't
yeah.
know if you have, but that's a big deal here in the States,
mm-hmm.
Prescriptions, new patients, triaging patient calls about symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to hear that that has been effective, because there's been mixed reviews ahead of time on people thinking, oh, it's, you know how people, it's changed, so that's never going to work.
Right.
But I'll be happy to say to people, I heard about this,
yeah,
and it works.
Well, you know, we have what we call, exceptional medication forms to fill out for all of the DMTs, that whether people have private insurance or they have, you know, under a sort of a public plan, you know, there has to be a special request because of the cost. So it's very specific. Each drug is a little different. Each form is a little different. And, you know, but the secretaries, they get that expertise. And if we get a call, we just say, I'm going to transfer you to, you know, so-and-so. She's the one who takes care of this. And it's just like, boop, and it's gone off my desk, you know.
I like that.
Right. So,
and the beauty is it gets handled. And that's the best news, right?
Yeah. No
excellent.
Problem.
Well,
yeah.
Thank
excellent.
You.
Thank you so much, Diane, for that perspective. Well, I'm sorry to say this has been a very robust discussion, and I think you certainly we could talk for a couple, probably another half hour. But I'm afraid we're out of time for this evening's discussion. So, however, on behalf of the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions, I'd like to thank Kathy for your presentation. Very, very relevant. And thank you again to Biogen IDECT for supporting these programs through their unrestricted educational grant. And as a reminder, I'd like to just tell you to remember to visit the IOMSN website for a summary of tonight's program at www.iomsn.org. There are some references that Kathy has attached to her summary that I think all of us will find helpful. As well, please remember to complete the post-town hall discussion survey so that we may continue to improve our programming to best suit your needs. And then just once again, as a reminder, our next town hall discussion will be on Tuesday, May 17th, and we will have Dottie Full from University of Pennsylvania discussing motivational interviewing for the MS nurse. Thank you again for joining us this evening. We hope you have a lovely holiday week this week, and this concludes tonight's meeting.
Thank you. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for your participation.